This is Phil Ferens, and I am driving home. It is Thursday today. This is episode 360. And there is actually, I should put my seatbelt on. There's actually like only four more episodes until we hit 7 years worth of episodes. So many words. Big pile of nothing. So I've got to get in touch with my kids and my wife and say, hey, it's time for an annual episode again. And we'll just do that from now on out. 7 years worth of episodes. We're almost, are we on the downside of, going to 10? I don't think so. Because it would be 7.5 years would be the downside of going to 10. So anyways, that's coming up. I'm sure it will be extraordinarily exciting. Anyway, so moving forward, good week. Good work. Good week at work. Good work at week. You know, got a lot of things accomplished, and we're moving forward on a bunch of projects and searching and searching and searching for a business process platform. It's going to be interesting to see where we end up. That all goes well. The writing of it was good this week. It was good, but I got into an intense section and man, I had to rewrite it several times, and I'm still not sure that I'm there, but I'm moving on. Sometimes you just got to get away from it and get back to it, because I got to get my word count moving, because I'm already up to page like 350, and I'm supposed to be closing up around 425, and there's quite a bit of story left to tell. I'm going to have to like get this stuff resolved without many complications. Boy, I'm really hoping this book doesn't go to 450 pages, but, you know, it moves along pretty well, so. Ugh. You know, sometimes when you're trying to keep them to a certain limit, it's tougher than if you're just going. It looks like I am going to go ahead and take a writing vacation at the end of this month. There's a split weekend there where I can make budget, do my 4 weeks of work in the month like I've promised, yada, yada, but I think I'm going to spend a little time doing that because, you know, I'm gonna need the extra time if I'm gonna hit the book on schedule. And, you know, I used to do this all the time when Lynette was working full time at the church. Of like 4 weeks out of the year, we'd take vacation and we'd go do something or we'd just take some time off. And so that was fun doing that. But then we kind of got out of that habit after she left the church, and I was just, you know, trying to make a little extra money to have a little extra on the side to make up for the gap and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, everything's fine. So if I take that writing vacation, I should be able to get caught up to where I need to be. We'll see. I've started to work on the cover just, you know, mentally and collecting images and trying to get an idea. I thought I kind of had an idea of where I wanted to, go with the cover. Then I mocked it together and it just, it did not happen. And then I realized it was kind of in the same vein of some other stuff that I've done already. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe I need to go a different direction. So now I've started to collect images. I think maybe I'm going to go with the Cambodian ruins, the Angkor Wat ruins, some of them from the Khmer Empire, which are just, man, it's just gorgeous stuff. It's unbelievable. Old, overgrown, you know, it's cool stuff, but I just have to be able to find something that I can put together in a vertical orientation. You know, it's interesting, most of the pictures that you find out there, because widescreen and, you know, everyone's used to that landscape organization, they're all set up for that, and so I kind of have to pick and choose as I'm cutting things out and putting things together to get it to fit in that 6 inches wide by 9 inches tall aspect ratio. And so it's can be a little bit of a challenge to figure out how to slice all that stuff together. And I'm cutting pieces of things apart so that when you're looking up at a perspective, you don't expect to see the top of the mountain or something, because then I can just cut the mountain any way I want to. And but when you're looking down on it, then you got to do other things, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So it's all very, very interesting. But I got to get the book finished first, and that's coming along. It's coming along. I had some nice conversations this week. Conversation with a friend. Had breakfast with a friend this morning. Had a nice breakfast with him. I've finished roasting the last of my coffee, actually ground up some of it and gave it to some friends, and they liked it, so I have a half a bag of coffee I still need to get through of the bulletproof coffee, and then I'm ordering the 10-pound bag of beans, and I'm just going to start roasting my own, because it's pretty good coffee. I just need a grinder, because the chopper that I have leaves a lot of dust, and then when I do my French press, that dust comes up and it's not so good. So if I get myself a little hand grinder, we can take care of that, you know, and then we'll go from there. But I like it. I like that coffee. I like that combination. It seems to be good. I think my son-in-law maybe thinks it's all psychosomatic, but I like it. Last Friday, speaking of my son-in-law, I did take my son-in-law to the airport. I picked him up, went down to meet him at his house at like 5:15 in the morning, and we went around and picked up a few more people and got them to the airport and unloaded them. And that all went well. They got down there safely. They've been working at Costa Rica, and so they're coming back on Saturday. And I'm trying to find out at this point if I need to go pick them up from the airport or not. Or if Lizzie, my daughter, is going to do that. But I'll get that information nailed down tonight. So, anyways, all is well. All is well. I actually worked on a couple of different potential articles about the topic that I wanted to talk about today. And I decided to not do the first article, but do the second article, because it was a little more religious. But I gotta tell you that after I got down through all the notes, I was like, oh, well, we didn't really get anywhere here. But there are a couple of interesting things in it. So I thought, well, we'll talk about it, and then I'll kind of talk about my perspective about this. Both articles were on pornography. You know, and pornography is an interesting structural thing. It's so interesting. I'm not talking about watching pornography is interesting. I'm talking about the construct of pornography. And how it has changed. And the first article I was going to talk about was the impact that pornography has had on technology, because there's really no question that the technological revolutions in terms of information and video and on-demand video and all, that those have really been pushed and facilitated by pornography. I had even heard someone say that no new technology can truly be, no new, maybe it's entertainment technology, can ever truly be successful unless it in some way enables and enhances pornography, which that's an interesting thing. And I'm not going to necessarily get into it, but suffice it to say that VHS and Betamax, some will say that the reason that VHS won is not only because it was cheaper, but because the pornographers embraced it. And so then a lot of the initial sales for pornography were, in fact, the pornographers were using VHS mostly, not beta, or more VHS than beta. Therefore, there was a wider selection available for VHS. And when guys were buying machines, then they'd see all the VHS tapes, so they'd go buy a VHS recorder as opposed to Betamax. All that stuff's interesting. But more interesting to me is this odd tension that there is in women trying to make a place of safety and control for themselves by using their looks and by using men's desire to look at them. But at the same time, there being too many women who are willing to do that and finding that they are out of control in that. You know, it's kind of like the women who are going to the Comic-Cons and things like that, and they're all dressed up, and then they start complaining that men are taking pictures of them when they don't want pictures taken of them, even though they're in a public space. That's an odd tension to me. And it's an interesting tension to me that pornography really chews up and spits out women. You know, that even though they are still good-looking women, they can only take it for so long. And then a lot of them just say that I just can't do this anymore. And it's so interesting to me that the power of sight in men is such that they can be enticed and drawn in and charged incredible amounts of money just for the opportunity of being isolated and of doing things that make them feel guilty, and in the long run, doing things that actually lead to erectile dysfunction and all the... It's just... Wow, it's so twisted and turned upside down. And I don't know what it has necessarily been in my makeup that has kept me from being someone that is interested in watching a lot of pornography or interested in, you know, engaging that when, for instance, I'm on a business trip and away from home. I think part of it is pride, surprisingly enough, that that's something that normal guys do, and deep down I think I'm better than that. But also, years and years and years ago, I was away on a business trip, and, you know, I was in the hotel room, and obviously they have porn, and I turned it on for, just to see, I turned it on for probably 3 minutes, well, maybe 2 minutes. The first thing I noticed is that the lighting was really bad. And then the next thing I noticed is that the script was really bad. And then the next thing I noticed was that the acting was really bad. Blech. And I just thought, I'm not going to sit here and watch this poor, poor craftsmanship just because people are having sex. But I would hope one of the big reasons that this hasn't been something that has necessarily attached itself to me is that I really do try to view women as human beings. Real live human beings. And, you know, to see them exploited, to see them when I know that deep down this is not what they want, but it's a way they can make money. You know, that's just not good. But anyways, this article that I was reading, not the technological article, but this one was more of a religious article, and it was called Not Your Father's Pornography, and it was made back in 2008, so I'm sure everything the guy was noting here, it's just noting more now. But there were some interesting thoughts in it. He talked about a friend of his that back in college, when he was younger, he was at his fraternity house partying with his friends when they waited for a stripper to arrive. And he said, so she arrives and she begins her performance. And then she catches my friend's eye, and he realizes and she realizes they'd been in high school together. And she got her things together and she ran away. And he said, what a quaint story that is in these days. You know, that in order to get to a sex performance, it involved real live flesh and blood human beings. And when their gazes met, she knew the same thing he knew, that she was a woman with parents and siblings and maybe children and certainly friends and a history which presumably once included dreams that had gone wrong. And she was ashamed. And he makes the point, I think rightly so, that some will say that, well, pornography has always been with us. But this availability of being able to pull it right into our homes without, quote unquote, anyone knowing, which has always seemed silly to me because I would know. You know, I would know. That is different. He said the internet is essentially Gnostic, disembodied. He said you can dispense ideas through it, but not sacrament community embodiment. So, I mean, and he starts quoting statistics, and I'm sure the statistics are even higher now, and they are appalling. Said of internet users in the United States, 40% visit porn sites at least once a month. The number rises to 70% when the audience is men aged 18 to 34. The internet has been a driving force for the porn industry, pushing the bounds of speed access, streaming downloads, and file sharing. You know, the cell phone industry, he claimed, is actually hoping porn can do the same thing for them, and that is bring in lots and lots of revenue. Because in the olden days, when there was just AOL, you know, the story is told of the guys who are giving AOL $1,200 a month. $1,500 a month on dial-up because they're wanting to download these pictures. And of course, AOL probably wasn't complaining about that. Just like the cell phone companies won't complain about that. I've read different figures, but somewhere, I've seen figures at 20 billion, I've seen them at 10 to 20, I've seen it 60 billion worldwide. It's really hard to actually nail down what the figure is because it's kind of an underground market. But the guy in this article, he said, you know, if some of the numbers are even close to true, said that's more than all professional sports. It's three times more than Google, Yahoo, and MSN make in a year combined. I mean, porn is huge. It's just huge. So I'm gonna get my mail here one moment. It said the average age of one's first exposure to web porn at this time was 11. Hey, that might be my That might be my lanyard. Maybe. I've got a Doctor Who lanyard coming in, which would be very cool. So, I mean, you can... Oh, there's more stuff in here. Well, rats. I'm going to have to go... Hold up. I got to get farther out from the mailbox to get those pieces, because they're down below. You know, and there's all kinds of people writing about this, and, you know, things like... Many college kids don't even think of Playboy as porn. It's too mild. And he goes into... let me just skip through a bunch of this stuff, because it's not really that important. Yada, yada. And, of course, there's other... There's other approaches, like Denmark decided that they... slashed all their anti-obscenity laws, and so they're just whatever, and they find that when there's just naked women on the TV every night, that the biggest thing that happens is just boredom. And people just get to the place where it's whatever. But anyways, what's interesting to me about all of this, and this article, you know, went on for a while. And I don't know... Oh, but this was one thing. This is what I wanted to... It's one of the things that's really interesting that I did not know about this, and I did not double-check this, but this article seems like it's a scholarly article, so I'm going to assume that it's true. He says in this article that early Christians were baptized nude. He said it's one of the most striking images from the early church, all the more so given our forebears' supposed repression and our age's proud liberation. When Paul says that we are those who have stripped off the old self with its practices and been clothed with the new self, according to the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness, he said ancient Christians took the language literally enough to remove their outer garments and emerge from the water as naked as the day they were born, and then be covered with a white garment, symbolizing the purity of the eighth day of creation. I mean, that's... Wow, that's really interesting. There was, I think it's in this article as well, yeah, that Naomi Wolf... wrote. I mean, this is another one of those interesting quotes they had in the article that I thought, wow, this is really kind of causing weirdness. Naomi Wolf had written, I'm backing into my garage, that she came of age in a day when, put it her way, in the 70s, when it was still pretty cool to be able to offer a young man the actual presence of a naked, willing young woman. Not now. Naomi Wolf says, now, today, real naked women are just bad porn. Well, that's an interesting quote. And if women didn't have enough insecurities already, and enough fear already, I mean, the destruction that this does to the fabric of relationships, to know that, you know, you got your guy and he's watching all these artificially enhanced women with camera angles and with lighting and with the director and, you know, and how's a poor girl supposed to compete with that? Well, I think for me, this whole porn issue really comes down to how we respect and how we treat women in general. And you can say, well, you know, she wants people to look at her. That's why she does porn. But that's not really true. Most of the women who are in porn, they have a real need for validation. You know, there's some kind of relationship issue. There are some who just like it, sure.
But for the majority, it's a transaction. You know, pay me, give me this, whatever, and then I'll do that. I mean, so there's no underlying, I am, trying to help you with something. I am interested in your well-being. All I'm interested in is you give me money and then I'll do this. And the more I can get you addicted to this process, the better. And see, that's not we no good. No good. Because I want to be on a better relationship with people than that. One of the things that I just think is so fun is going into a restaurant that I've gone into for a long time, and inevitably, I walk in the door and someone will say, "Hi, Phil," and so we'll talk and, we'll have a nice conversation. And yes, I'm there to consume their food. Yes, they are there to serve. Yes, they know I'm going to give them a good tip. But they do see me as a human being because of the way they treat me. I see them as human beings because I the way I treat them. So, I mean, we're always going to have the service industry, and we're always going to have people who are doing certain things in order to be paid. But in that, we can also have quality relationships because we are together. And we are interact communally and in a community. Whereas with porn, for the most part, you've got this sterile environment where on one side of the screen, someone is just panting and just trying to get what they want immediately. And on the other side of the screen, you've got someone panting and trying to do whatever they can do to get the other person all the more addicted to it so they'll spend more money. It's not good. It's just sad. It's just so very sad. But, for some, especially once they get started, it's really, really hard to back out of it. So, there's not, I don't think there's any kind of magic bullet that's going to solve the porn problem that we have in this country. And I do not think it's positive. I do think there's a solution, but I think that solution requires a lot of effort. And I think it's about the same amount of effort that it takes to address obesity. And we all know how we're doing on that count. So there you go. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens to this society in the years to come. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.